Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter and broker here at StoneX. I work in the grain and oil seed markets, also do some energy and livestock, deal mostly in futures and options, but also OTC and structured products. And for our hedging clients, we offer consulting services. If you have any questions for me or what we're doing here, you can always give me a call at 312-706-7610. You can email craig.turner@stonex.com. If you like the podcast, please go on over to iTunes, give us a positive review, send it to someone who you think might like it. If you want to check out the newsletter, you can go to turnerstake.com. All right, so let's get into it here. I would say first thing we want to get into is some of the macro stuff that's been going on. Employment wasn't the greatest recent number. We've had, you know, inflation. There are some people that think inflation's going to peak, but not exactly come down. The Fed spoke recently. I think they want to, kind of slow down the rate hikes, but, they're not going to stop or reverse anytime soon. And they're going to keep an eye on to see how inflation, inflation changes, if any, as we go forward. So, I think the macro landscape is kind of the same with same as it has been with interest rates and inflation. When we take a look at the energy markets, OPEC is meeting over the weekend, and they're going to announce if they're going to do any cuts. We think they will. Anytime crude oil gets into the 70s, OPEC seems to cut production, so we can, to kind of as a support mechanism. There are, beware of the stories that come out around OPEC. It always seems like something finds its way into the Wall Street Journal or Reuters or somewhere of just, and maybe not the most accurate information. I think a couple of weeks ago, there was a story, it was last week, a story came out saying OPEC was considering increasing output, and, crude all of a sudden was down $3, $4, or $5. It was just a single unnamed source in a Wall Street Journal or a Reuters story. I can't remember which one. And then the next day later, they're talking about how they're cutting production. So just, when we come around these OPEC meetings, just know that sometimes the press get duped and start putting stuff out. We're kind of got to verify it first. So just something to keep in mind. I still like energy. I think that diesel for the winter, gasoline for the spring and summer, and crude oil for the spring and summer are good hedges or spec plays to the upside. I still like, buying calls and call spreads and selling put spreads. Don't love selling a naked put, but just because of the risk factor on it all. But I think there are a lot of interesting plays out there for the energy side. When it comes to the, and honestly, it's not, as far as that's not just for, someone who's speculating on higher energy prices, but there's a lot of businesses and producers in the grain and oil seed markets that have energy costs. And there's, if you can hedge that through the futures and options market, I think that's a smart play. At some point, the economy stabilizes and turns around. When it does, I just don't think the energy is going to be there to meet the growing demand. We'll see, but that's what it's looking like, looking like to us. So when we take a look at the grain and oil seed markets, a couple of things, from the old crop perspective, demand isn't that great, but we have tight stocks, so we have to remain elevated. And in a environment where you have tight stocks and you have high prices, and the point of the market is to slow down exports and domestic consumption, and it is doing that, especially on the export side. We're about 100 to 150 million bushels behind pace. Last time I looked at the corn export numbers, and I want to say we're about 50 million bushels short of the pace on soybeans. when we're up just a little bit on wheat. We're going to be short on pace for soybean oil, but the idea is that's going to be made up by the biofuel, domestic biofuel, and renewable biodiesel demand that's coming. So, you know, it's high prices. They're doing what they're doing. They either completely shut off the demand or at the very least shut off, you know, reduce the exports. And that's where we are. So it's kind of like the slow bleed lower. I'm sure we'll get some, you know, get some bumps along the way, whether it be a weather market or, you know, someone comes in, you know, with a big buy. You know, we've seen that happen with China before, other countries. But that's what it that's what it's like. We actually were just selling condors and butterflies and corn. I like that idea. I think we're going to range bound for a while in old crop. I do think if you're a farmer or producer, you're probably going to want to look at building in some floors here in corn, soybeans, and wheat for a new crop, just in case we have a good growing season, which right now should be at least decent based on some of the long-term weather forecasts. If I'm a consumer, I'm probably still buying month to month, quarter to quarter, as it looks like over the long term prices do eventually revert back to the mean. A couple of things going on in the export market and in South America. You know, the grain is moving out of the Black Sea. Russian wheat isn't as cheap as it used to be now that it's more available, and it sounds like they can get some kind of insurance and it's a little bit more acceptable on the export market. They don't have to, you know, slash it so much to get it moving. South America, Brazil looks pretty good in terms of weather. They have record acres. They even have a trend line yield, and right now it looks like they're going to have a better than trend crop. It's early on, but right now that's what it looks like. You know, Brazil's going to have a record crop. Argentina is still dry, but the forecasts are changing. La Nina is pretty much, the effects of La Nina are pretty much over, and we are transitioning to more neutral pattern. Could even have an El Nino next year. That is good for development, and we're expecting rains to come back to Argentina in the second half of December and January, which would be a perfect time for crop development out there. That, you know, that could get derailed, right? And if it does, then we're going higher. But for the moment, the market's thinking that's coming in, and every day just kind of sells off or just grinds lower. We also had the government of Argentina. By the end of the year, they want to generate more revenue. So they're giving farmers a very favorable exchange rate, something like 30 or 40% better than what they can get now, in order to entice them to sell. The reason why farmers in Argentina tend not to sell their soybeans is they hold it in the bin, kind of treat it as a bank, because they have about 88% year-over-year inflation. So there is no hurry for the Argentina farmer to, you know, to sell anything they don't have to. They have to raise cash, they have to raise cash, but if they don't, you know, you can make the case the soybeans and corn or grain in the bin is better than having cash in a bank account. So that we are seeing some soybeans come to market in China, buying a pretty good size of soybeans from Argentina here recently. So that puts a little bit of pressure on U.S. soybeans. So we are seeing U.S. soybeans come down. The other big story in the soybean market was the EPA and their renewable biofuels. They didn't increase biofuels as much as we were hoping for in 23. They did in 24 and 25. But on the same side, there's going to be a new e-RIN system. So the way, you know, the corn ethanol market works, there are RINs there. In case you can't, you know, produce the ethanol or meet the mandates, you can go in and buy the RINs to satisfy that requirement. What's going to happen here on the renewable biodiesel side, they're going to have e-RINs, e-RIN, for basically electrical car manufacturers, or EVs, electronic vehicles. So if you're a company like Tesla and you're producing these electronic vehicles, you're going to eventually, there's a way in this process to get the credits that can help offset the biofuel mandate the same way, you know, same thing with RINs and ethanol. So I think that was a little bit of a surprise. And between that and exports for soybean oil being poor, and the ethanol mandate and the biofuel mandate not as big as people are hoping for in 23, you know, and the funds also being long about 100,000 contracts, kind of it caused definitely a sell-off after the bulls didn't get what they wanted from the EPA. And even though soybean oil has a very strong long-term bullish story, in the short term, we're going to sell off and we're going to have to readjust or correct, the price. So we'll see if the 65 area holds. We are limit down today. The funds were very long. Wouldn't be surprised to see some follow through selling heading into the weekend and then kind of rebound and stabilize next week. But it's I think you now have to realize all the lost exports we're going to lose because of the price rationing basically have to go to renewable biodiesel. And at the moment, to keep the ending stocks where they are on the U.S. balance sheet, all the lost or the reduced exports looks like we're going to have for soybean oil need to find their way into the renewable biodiesel industry, which I think is possible, but that's about as bullish I can get in the medium to short term on bean oil. Still a pretty big believer in bean oil, but even corn during those years of 2007 through 2010 had some big up and downs here, and I think we're going to see that with the bean oil too. The ethanol market's now mature, but back then it was growing. The biodiesel is just growing now. We're years away from being mature, so most likely a bull market still, but big fluctuations and could be down here for a little while as the market catches up and reprices bean oil. That's gonna have some effect on canola too. Canola, just because the canola oil and the soybean oil are fairly do kind of trade in a fairly similar pattern. On the canola side also, just for canola seed and soybeans, if you are a farmer, now you can start looking into putting hedges on. I was doing hedges in both today, in November soybeans and in November canola. I was able to buy put spreads in both and sell call spreads to help finance them. If you're interested in that, I have written about the soybeans meal. For the Canadian clients, I'll put something in our the Canadian newsletter tomorrow for canola. And then finally, on the wheat market, it's interesting. Wheat here, corn's at about 660, 650. Wheat has been trading in the high sevens. It's when wheat starts to be less than a dollar premium to corn, meaning, let's say corn is at 660, wheat's at 760, and if that scenario should happen, and if it keeps on going, where it's not a dollar premium, it's like less than a dollar premium wheat to corn. And so I'm talking about Chicago wheat here. You do start to see more feed use on the wheat side. And the thing is, stocks are tight. I don't think the market wants to see that. I think the market's gonna probably rally in the wheat market if that does happen. And every time we get close to a dollar, it seems like we do bounce. So the thing is, and the reason why I bring that up, if corn's gonna find support here, like at 640, 650, 660, that really means wheat needs to be, have support levels of like 750, 760, 770, which in turn means we'll have, Kansas City wheat having support levels in the mid to high eights, and then spring wheat in, let's say, the low nines. And they're all kind of related. And it's hard to see the three wheats and the corn break through those resistance levels without a major change. And that major change would probably be something like, we confirm a very big crop in Argentina. Maybe the weather gets better. La Nina really does dissipate, and all of a sudden Argentina starts getting rains and plentiful rains. Then I think you can see that whole system, all those support levels be broken down, and maybe having corn go down to six, and Chicago wheat go down to seven, and Kansas City wheat, run into the high sevens, and spring wheat, run into the mid eights. Like I can see that, but it takes a big takes the weather. You need the weather issues to basically stop in Argentina and actually reverse and have favorable growing conditions, which we're not there yet. And that's not saying we will be there, but that's what we probably need to take right now. And then finally, just in terms of the new crop here, I've been looking at acres for US new crop, And every time I crunch these numbers, I'm coming up with about 92 million corn, somewhere between 87 and 88, maybe closer to 87 soybeans, and about 49 million on all wheat. Now, the thing with that is, I mean, that's maxing out corn and soybeans and wheat. Like, I can't add any more acres, I don't think, realistically, into the mix by doing that. And what's interesting is, if, you know, at about 49 million acres wheat and a trend line yield, you know, you might add 50 million bushels year over year. And that's assuming a trend line yield. And everyone, you know, we have some pretty rough conditions in the western part of the belt here, of the plains. You know, good to excellent ratings are about 34%. 5-year average about 49%. We did start off this year at 28%, good to excellent. So 34% is a 6-point bump, but it's still not great, and it's still not suggesting a trend line yields. But we got a long way to go, and there is thoughts that we're going to get more moisture here over the winter and early spring based on long-range forecasts and estimates. So there's still time for the wheat crop, but still, even with the, you know, an average yield year over, you know, the year over year increase into, you know, wheat, you know, still implies wheat trades in the $6, $7, and $8, or even with a really good crop on an acre, higher acres than we've seen in 5 years. When I take a look at the soybean market, 87 million acres and a trend line yield, we're kind of using as much as we produce. You know, but, you know, if maybe we're at 250 million. If you go to an 88 million acre soybeans, you know, maybe we're at 300 million. We're not burdensome. That doesn't mean $9 soybeans. If anything, it, you know, maybe at harvest you're in the low tens or something like that. But it still means for most of the year we're 11, 12, 13, maybe even 14, just depending on conditions and demand. So, and it's hard. It's hard to get more than 88 million acres of soybeans when you take a look at the prices of corn and wheat. So what's that telling me is, like, soybeans, basically year over year, we produce what we use. And for stocks to expand, we're going to need more foreign production to take away exports from the United States. Because basically that's how soybean prices break, which could very well happen this year if Brazil has a record crop. They're planting 104 million acres. They're off to a great start. They probably are going to have, right now they are on track for having a better than average yield. You know, and if Argentina conditions can improve, you know, then they're going to have a monster South American crop. If Argentina conditions don't improve that much, who knows, maybe the better production in Brazil helps offsets Argentina. Moral of the story, though, is 88 million acres, 87 million acres soybeans, we produce what we use on an average yield. And the moral of the story here going forward is it's going to be other nations are going to have to expand acreage to basically, I get, you know, lower prices. So if you're on the producer side, you know, I'm taking a look at this, and I probably am looking out and November 23 and selling more, or, you know, buying put spreads and selling call spreads like I've been writing about in Turner's Take. I think that makes sense going forward, as long as South American has a big crop. I mean, we could be below 12. We could even be sub 11, depending on how things go later this year. Corn market's interesting because when you look at the profitability per acre, you know, assuming people can get fertilizer this spring and prices don't go up too much more from where they are now, there's going to be an incentive to plant more corn over wheat and soybeans, just like normal on a profitability per acre and aspect. And that's how you get 92 million acres of corn. And if we get 92 million acres corn and kind of a trend line yield, what happens is ending stocks year over year, you know, go up 500 million. And you know, we will be at, it'll go from a 1.2 or 1.3 carry out and old crop to a 1.7 or 1.8. And if that happens, then this time next year at harvest, you know, we could be closer into the low fives. Now that's a long way off, but that's what the numbers are suggesting. And again, all these are suggesting the acres that I'm talking about, 87 soybeans, 92 corn, 49 in wheat. You can add, you know, if you like, you can add a 500,000, take away a 500,000 either way. But that's pretty much the pie of what's going on in trend line yields. And again, you can make the argument, things aren't off to a great start or we're dry out west. I get it. That's not what the market's going to price initially, but I understand the argument. And that's kind of where we are. And when I look at that, when I look at these things, it still says to me, wheat's tight for another year. And we really, the South American production isn't going to make a dent that we needed to for the global export market. So a lot is riding on the winter wheat and spring wheat harvests later on this year. It doesn't look like the U.S. harvest will solve any issues, nor will the Canadian spring wheat harvest or the northern United States spring wheat harvest or any of the winter wheat that's produced in the United States. It's going to have to come from around the world. And what's interesting is, you know, Ukraine did not only planted 2/3 of the acres because they just didn't have the financial resources or really the labor and or the money to plant all the acres. So we're talking a third lower wheat out of acres coming out of Ukraine. That's a big deal. I just think we stay elevated longer in the wheat market. If South America has a bumper crop and we do weather patterns shift from La Nina to more neutral weather pattern, then we get the rains in December, especially January and into February, it could be a really big crop in South America, which would suggest eventually soybeans come down first. And then just with the math on corn, the fact that it is so profitable, we will see 92 million acres and a trend line yield adds 500 million bushels year over year. I mean, when I look at my models, I can make a case for corn at harvest next year between 5 and 550. And then if you keep corn again for 24, at around 90 million, where, by the way, corn's going to be like at $5 when people are making a decision, and beans could be 10 and wheat could be 6 or 7. It still would make sense to plant corn. You get another 90, 91 million acres of corn for the year after that. I'm talking 24 now, so 2 years out. All of a sudden, we're above 2 billion on the carried again in corn. And we're trying to figure out what the new lows are. What I think what's really interesting is 2 years from now, the new lows look like $4 and not the 330 or 340, 320 that it used to be when you had like a 2.1 or 2.2 billion carryout. So anyways, there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm going to wrap up with this. If you're a farmer, you know, we might be talking about calls for old crop to sell into. We're doing a little buyback just in case we get a weather market in South America. And we'll talk about that a little bit. I think the bigger thing to focus on, though, is for new crop. And we talk about new crops, we're usually talking about puts, right? Because a lot more of the new crop hasn't been sold or hedged yet, right? So we're really looking to protect our bottom line on a floor on new crop. You know, an old crop, you're already over halfway sold. Maybe you're 70, 80% sold. The reason why we look at calls sometimes on the old crop, it's almost like a revenue protection. You know, like you don't want to miss out on any big rallies, which I get, right? But on the new crop, it's really about puts. And, you know, there's so much money going into the inputs and so much at risk on the farm. That's why we look at the put strategies for the new crop, because nothing's really sold or hedged on that. Yet we're putting out money, you know, to make that crop now. So we will be talking more about that. On the consumer side, if you're an end user, you know, on wheat, I think that, you know, some of these prices that we're seeing here, we're testing some major support. I don't see why we break down right now. So it's probably a good time for the end user to be buying here in the wheat. I think on soybeans and corn, everyone can keep on going quarter to quarter and wait for lower prices as we go. If you are a food and beverage company, or you know you're in a market or an energy, you know, you're in a business that does use the agricultural products, corn, soybeans, or wheat, or some derivative of it, you know, there's nothing wrong with buying some calls just in case the market takes off because something happens in the Black Sea or South America, or the United States, on the weather side. But you can probably use the be patient and continue to buy maybe, you know, quarter to quarter until prices continue to come down. Commodities eventually revert back to the mean. I think the averages will be higher now with all this inflation, but, you know, I don't think where prices are right now are going to be the new average. I wouldn't be surprised if corn is, averaging closer somewhere in the fours from going on, in the fours, wheat in the sixes and soybeans in the 10, or maybe those are closer to the new lows. Time will tell, but that's just the way it looks like it's going to us. So I'm going to be in our EdgeX webinar on Tuesday. You'll see some emails about that. I'll also go over some of our price forecasting and our drivers to watch. So please tune in if you can. If you have any questions for me on the hedge side, producer, end user, or if you are, a speculator here, there are some interesting opportunities in the grain and energy markets. My view is the same, regardless if I'm bullish or bearish, but there are different ways to play the market depending on your objectives. So give me a call if you like. My number is 312-706-7610. My email address is craig.turner@stonex.com. Clients have my cell phone. You can call my cell or text me also. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great rest of your week, and I'll talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.